my name's Ray, and I am an alcoholic. And really, the only way he could get me up here, or my wife could get me up here, was put a Diet Coke here in front of me, so... I hope I don't spill it like I did outside. A few weeks ago, Rick B. spoke, and he said something that I heard but didn't really understand, and that was, it's a very daunting thing to get up in front of your home group and speak, because Central is my home group. And he's right, because I'm nervous. I'll be real honest with you. And I do this. I don't do this for a living, but I speak in front of people I teach for a living, and it's normal for me to get up. I remember when I had to do it the first time, saying, you know, get up and imagine everybody's naked in front of you. Honey, don't worry. I'm only looking at you. My sobriety date is March 26, 1996, the current one. And I know that I'm supposed to tell you how it was, what happened, and how it is now. And if you'd asked me this a week ago, it would have been different, because each day for me is a new day, and each day brings the promise of growth as long as my eyes and my heart are open to it. I was born, you know, a typical kid into an army family overseas in Germany, and I lived most of my life there, most of the first 14 years of my life. So I never had the benefit of McDonald's or Burger King or anything like that. I remember when kids would get stationed there, they would come over and they'd be talking about McDonald's or Burger King. I'm like, oh, what are you guys talking about? I didn't have that concept in my mind. One concept that I did have, though, was how an NCO club was operated. Now, for those of y'all who are not military, NCO stands for non-commissioned officer, and that's what my father did. He ran the NCO club. So very early on, I was introduced... Come on back. I was introduced to what liquor and partying could do for you. And for the first 14 years of my life, that's how it was. I grew up in a good family. I didn't lack for food. I didn't lack for a house. I didn't lack for clothing. I didn't lack for anything except for self-esteem, self-confidence, and all of those other things that as an alcoholic meant so much to me. I isolated a lot as a kid. I thought it was cool. I was in control. You couldn't play with my stuff. And that's how it was until I was 14, but I would bitch that I didn't have any friends. You know, because I didn't really bother to try to make any. We moved around a lot, so I didn't find it necessary, but I used that as an excuse. Well, I don't ever have any friends, and that's why I feel this way. The truth is, I've been an alcoholic since I was born. I know that today because of this program, the people in this program, and God. I know that for a fact, and it's something that I will never deny again. Because like you, Jim, I denied it too for a long, long time. So, 14, I had my first drink of alcohol. I had planned it, obviously, because my father always kept a well-stocked liquor bar. Of course, it wasn't his that we raided, it was a friend's that we raided that night. They were down at a party, and we decided to get everything we could out of the cabinet, mix it into a big 2-liter Pepsi bottle, and drink it. And I got drunk. Surprise! I liked the way it felt, like the book says. You know, people drink essentially because they like the feeling. I liked it because all of those feelings of inadequacy. You know, I was never good looking enough. I never got the girl. Didn't have a car. Didn't have a job. I had grades. Yeah, big deal. It's because I didn't do anything else. All of that went away, but magically it was gone, and I didn't have to worry. My father thought it was quite funny. He threatened to throw me in the lake, because we lived near a lake. And from then on, it was, I'm going to do this whenever I can. Now, obviously, too, this was in the mid or early 70s. Yes, I'm much older than I look, really. And there were other things floating around that we like to try out. And I know this is about alcohol, so I'll keep it at that. And I managed to maintain grades through about my sophomore year at a wonderful place called Osceola High School in big old town of Kissimmee, Florida. Of course, back then there was no Disney World, so I managed to maintain until about my sophomore year when it just exploded. And I partied my way through the last 2 years of high school. How I graduated, I was a short order cook on the turnpike at Canoe Creek Service Plaza. Back before they had Burger Kings, and it was a restaurant where, you know, you sat down and the waitresses with the beehive hairdos and the hook nose, and they were all there. And of course they didn't like me because I made better tips than they did. The girl that was my manager liked me and would do most anything for me. Not for that reason, but because I was a nice guy. And so I quit my job like February. I'm on this work program, and I think they still have it now, where you can work and you get credits for working and you get credits for school. Because, you know, I had taken all the courses and pretty much skipped them all and failed them all, so it was about the only thing left for me. Well, I quit my job like in February, and see, school runs through May, so that's quite a few hours that I was short in order to graduate with enough credits. Well, I tracked this girl down, and I convinced her to sign the papers saying that I had enough hours to get the credits to graduate from high school. So in 1976, sometime in June, I think, that's back when the school years went past May, I graduated from high school and proceeded to go to the beach for 3 weeks. And I promise I'll only be drunk for 15 minutes, Jim. I proceeded to basically go from room to room for 3 weeks. Some of the people I knew, some of the people I didn't. It didn't matter. They needed to have liquor. You know, some guy would be too drunk to go down to the store and get a bottle. I'd go. I never made it back to that room. Somebody else's room, maybe, or down on the beach somewhere. It's just when you could still drink on the beach. And for 3 weeks, that's what I did. Every night until I blacked out. I have little to no recollection of what happened during that time. I stayed jobless for the next 2 years. Through the grace of my father at the time, he was separated from my mom, but he managed a hotel. He gave me a job in a hotel as the banquet convention manager. That's like, yes, little boy, here's the candy, and here's the key to where we keep the candy. Because basically, I booked functions. I booked weddings. I booked parties. So I got to 10 bar. And I worked a lot. I worked a lot of overtime during that time. Because I could drink. And I drank every night until pretty much I managed to make it home, but I would pass out. You know, just for the record, and I'm only going to say this just for the record so that you don't have any questions. I've been married several times. I'm now married to a wonderful young lady that most of y'all know, Julie. I have 3 children from previous marriages, and I'm blessed to have my daughter here with me tonight. And that's enough about that. So I got that out of the way, and now we can talk about what matters. For the next year or two, I just wanted to get that out of the way, because, well, did you get married, did you divorce and all that? That's irrelevant. What's relevant is, for the next few years, I did nothing but drink and party, and that was it. My son was born. All I wanted to do was drink and party. I lived in a HUD-subsidized apartment complex so that I could have money to drink and party. That was my goal in life, would be the oldest living drunk partier. That was my purpose. Until we moved out of country to a little island off the coast of Venezuela. Again, here's the candy store. It was unbelievable. I can't remember any of those years. They're gone from my memory forever because of what I did. It's really sad. And those of y'all that have blacked out and can't remember that day, you know exactly how that feels. Upon being told that I was no longer wanted on that island, and barring the fact that if I stayed, it would be behind bars, and I really didn't want to be there, I came back to the States and lived with my parents. I'm 24 years old, living with my parents. doing nothing but drinking and partying all night until I either made it home or I didn't. It didn't matter, as long as I knew where the next drink was. I worked enough so I could have money to drink and party. That was it. I went to California on a run, as they call it. Okay, that's a second reference to that. We'll leave it at that. And I was going again because I knew that was my big chance. And I laid there one night. I was laying in bed, and I was so drunk, and I was so out of it. I thought I was going to die. In fact, I'm sure that I was on my last legs. And all I could think of was that I didn't want to die. I couldn't stop drinking. I had tried. I mean, you know, yeah, I can. Okay, I'm not going to do this anymore. God, you know, 3 days later, I felt a little better. Okay, one drink won't hurt. Well, you know, a bottle and a half later, I'm passed out on the floor. I didn't want to die, but I couldn't stop. And I knew that I needed help. So I went to a girl that I was seeing, or that I actually was not seeing. She chose not to see me anymore. Imagine that. And said, look, I got a problem. But I think it's a drug problem. And she convinced me to go tell my parents, who I'd been mooching money off of for the last 2 years, to study and further myself in my profession, ductwork mechanic. I went to tell them, and they said, well, you need to get into treatment. So I went to an outpatient treatment program. At the time, it was over on Magnolia. It's called Magnolia Place. And I remember walking into the place, and they do, you know, some kind of examination. They look at your fingernails, they look at your arms, they look at your eyes. I don't even remember if they took blood. I think what they wanted was money for me to get enrolled in this treatment facility. And my parents paid for it. I'm 26 years old. My parents paid for it. And I remember the first AA meeting that I ever went to. It was in a big room, and it had a row of tables in a circle. And there's all these people sitting at the table. And one by one, and oh, mine's John, I'm an alcoholic, blah, 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 I'm an alcoholic. And it got to me. And I was about as nervous then as I am right now. And I said, my name's Ray, and I have a problem with drugs. So even then, I could not admit that I had a problem with alcohol. So once a week, I would go to the meeting. Twice a week, I would go to treatment. I would have a counselor, and he would talk to me. And I got a big book, and I got a 12-and-12, and I got a 24-hour book, and I got a little red book. And I was armed and dangerous. I never read them, of course, but I had the books. And to me, knowledge was king, because that's what I learned growing up in school. If you knew everything, you were the man. Of course, I thought I knew everything. Until, I didn't read the big book, I think, until 16 years later, actually. Anyway, I continued to drink for those 2 months that I went to these meetings and went to this treatment facility, because I didn't have a clue that alcohol was a problem for me, until one day I finally told my counselor. I said, it happened to come up in, as a subject, and I said, yeah, I had a beer the other night, I had some champagne. And he proceeded to tell me how a drug is a drug, and alcohol is a drug, and mind altering, and all this other stuff. I'm like, no, I'm not an alcoholic. Well, did you read the books? No, I didn't read the books. Well, I quit drinking, though. I said, you know what? Maybe there is something to this. I need to stop drinking. I need to grow up. I need to be a responsible male person in this world and do what my father told me to do, taught me to do. And that's, you know, you don't cry. You do your job. You take care of your family. You pay your bills. Those, you know, those are the things that I was taught growing up. So I said, fine. You know, I quit. And I went to the AA meeting, one meeting a week, and it moved around, and it was always the same people, and nobody ever talked about, I don't know if they had the concept of what I see as AA now, but nobody ever talked to me about a sponsor. Nobody ever talked to me about the big book of 12 and 12. And I'm not blaming them. It was just kind of strange because when I got back into it several years ago, it was all totally new and totally different to me. And I didn't know what was going on. So I managed to stay sober for 11 years without going to meetings, without reading the literature. However, when somebody that thought they had an alcohol problem knew of my involvement with the treatment center, they would come to me and ask me for advice. And of course, I was armed with step 1 and step 12, you know, the two-step. And being from Kissimmee, fit right into me. Okay? Of course, I wasn't real good at a two-step when I wasn't drunk. And I would proceed to tell them what they needed to do with their life in order to get straightened out. I was doing it. I was staying sober. You can do it too. If I can do it, you can do it. The fact that those 11 years were absolute miserable hell inside of me did not dawn on me that that was part of what was going on. That was part of the problem. I didn't know to put two and two together and to see that because I'm not drinking doesn't mean I'm not an alcoholic. Alcohol is a symptom. Everybody knows that. Or most alcoholics know that. I treated my disease with alcohol and many other things. I didn't treat what the real problem was, and that was the spiritual malady that the book talks of. But I managed to stay sober for 11 years. I was not a happy, dry drunk either. I was angry. I have two beautiful daughters that were born during that time. And now, because of this program, I see what was going on at that time. And I've been able to embrace that as part of my past. Not that I like it, but that's part of who I am. Because everything that I am today is the sum of everything that has happened to me before today. And that's part of it. So one fateful night, actually I picked up not a drink, because again, you know, my mind is one of an alcoholic. And I rationalized myself into thinking I could smoke pot for a while. But I wasn't drinking. I was still sober until I didn't have any more pot. And again, I was staying with my parents. And now I'm 30 years old and I'm staying with, or 35 years old, and I'm back with my parents again, living in the extra bedroom that we went and stole the bed out of somebody else's house to put in there. And I got nothing to smoke. I got no way to handle what's going on in here because none of that stuff ever went away. I never dealt with any of it. Of course, my dad still kept a liquor cabinet. He only had one kind in the CC Canadian Club. That is some god-awful stuff. But you know what? It didn't matter because I was determined to get drunk that night. And I believe I did. I don't remember much of that night because, once again, after 11 years of not drinking, I picked the bottle up and I drank until I passed out. That did not change at all. And I couldn't believe it. I said, that was one night. I'll never do it again. 3 months later, several counseling sessions later, I went to a regional meeting for the company that I worked for, and I'm sitting at the dinner table one night with people at a banquet, awards banquet. I wasn't getting an award. They should have given me one, but, you know. And the steward, the waiter steward, whatever, comes around, and he starts pouring wine. And I said, what the hell? What's it going to hurt? You know? No effective defense. No mental defense whatsoever. And again, I drank that night until I passed out. And it was on wine. God, it was horrible. I woke up with a headache the next morning. I thought my head was going to explode. It was really bad. And I just can't do this anymore. I know. I did it for 11 years. I don't need to drink. Several months later, on March 25th, 1996, was at another meeting, this time a national meeting, where they give out bigger awards, and I didn't get one. And I decided, you know what? I'm going to go out with the guys. What can it hurt? And again, I drank until I passed out that night. That was, I woke up the next morning and said, I can't do this anymore. But the one thing that I did not do was go to AA. All of the stuff that was inside of me, all of the inadequacies, the fact that I didn't have the car, the house, the money, all of that stuff was still there. All of the responsibilities I put on my shoulders from when I was young about, you know, doing my job, taking care of the family, paying the mortgage, all that crap was still there. I didn't have what I wanted because I thought what I wanted was the house, the car, and all that stuff. I didn't see what I had in front of me. I managed to stay sober. In other words, no, let me put it this way. I managed not to drink. I like that much better now that I have a little bit of education. I managed not to drink, I don't know, for another 6 years, 7 years, until 2 years ago, 2003. Was that 7 years? 9, 6, and 7. So yeah. I didn't drink, but I sure as hell wasn't happy. Excuse me, this is for me. I was still angry, irritable, restless, discontent. Felt like I was less than, always wanted to be better than. I could never get my hands around what I really wanted. I could never find a purpose in life. I never really understood what the hell I was doing on this place anyway. That's not for me. And I was confused. I was living alone. I was alone. And I was lonely. But God, being as good as He is, and again, this is nothing that I did. I owe it all to God. Puts people in my life when I need them most. And He put somebody in my life, Johnny. And we happened to be talking at the gym one day, and Johnny said something to me. He said, "To thine own self be true." And I said, "You know, I got that on a little medallion at home, because I never threw my medallions away. I went down to Intergroup and bought a medallion every year, even though I wasn't going to AA, just to say I could have the medallions. You know, I had a pocket full of medallions here, and they're worth about nothing." And Johnny looked at me and said, "Do you know Bill W?" I said, "Yeah, as a matter of fact, I do." I think it was a couple weeks later he convinced me to come to Central to a meeting. Now, I wasn't drinking. So in my justifiable rationalization, I could have said, "Oh, I'm not drinking. What do I need to go to AA for?" But for the last 4 or 5 years, I had been searching for something. I had gone to outside professional help, several psychologists, psychiatrics, whatever they are. Nobody told me I was an alcoholic because I didn't drink. But then again, they probably weren't either, because they probably would have recognized it right away. They told me stuff like, "Well, you know, religion is or spirituality is the architecture in which religion resides. If you don't like where you are, being the church," how's it going? Nice to meet you.
Thank you. My name is Jimmy.
Good to meet you, Jimmy. Glad you're here. Then find another church to go to. So. You know, because I had looked in church. I thought for some reason God had something to do with what I was looking for. I have a friend that's a pastor over in Sarasota, and he says, you know, God puts a hole in us, and it's called a God-shaped vacuum, and we're supposed to fill it up with God. Well, the hole that I had in me, I tried to fill up with everything else but God. And I'm not talking about Catholicism or Judaism or Buddhism or anything like that. I'm talking about spirituality. God as the one that created me. God as something that I cannot even imagine now. I'm human. I cannot imagine what God is all about. But I found God in a little house next door that used to be in that parking lot. And for the first time in my life, I felt like I belonged somewhere. Bless you. You know, I'm sitting in a room that smelled like stale smoke, and I had been to that meeting years and years and years and years ago, and it still smelled the same. Even though it was a non-smoking meeting, it still smelled the same. And I'm sitting with people that, as a quote, upstanding member of society, I would not normally be seen with. And now I look at the same people, and I count you as brothers and sisters, and I love you all. I felt like I was home. And all of a sudden, life got better. I actually started to read the big book. I actually got a sponsor. I actually worked the steps from 1 through 12 to the best of my ability at the time. You know, now I look back and say, oh, I didn't do a very good job. I did it the best I could at the time, and that's all I could do. And that's what I needed to do. And my life got better. I was able to make decisions that I needed to make that I couldn't make before because I was paralyzed by fear. Fear of, well, this is going to happen if I do, and this is going to happen if I don't, and I'm screwed either way. That's kind of like how I used to think about God. I shared something in a meeting the other night. There was a wager, and I can't remember the name of it, but it basically goes like, you can believe that there's a God, or you can choose to believe there is no God, and go on through your life and do what you need to do, but what happens if there is? You know, you're screwed. Now, you can also choose to believe there is a God, and what if there isn't? You haven't lost anything. You know? So, I went through a lot of years wanting to believe just because I didn't want to get screwed in the end that there was a God until I started to actually work this program, until the promises that Tinsel read started to come true in my life, until I was able to sit in a room full of people and not judge every single one of them because they weren't as good as I was. You know? That's when life really started to get good. And that's when God, again, in the infinite wisdom that He has that I will never, ever understand. My sponsor tells me that you'll find out when you die. Okay, that's when you get to know everything you don't know now. That's when I thought, I'm coasting along, life is good, I'm working the program, doing the steps, coming to meetings, and that's when life happened again. That's when the bottom fell out of my life. Not the physical one that I had experienced years and years and years ago, but a mental, emotional bottom that I never thought would happen. I said, man, I'm doing the steps. I'm doing it. Why is this happening to me? Poor me. And it was, you know, in the book, there are a lot of stories. And the story of Jim is there. And how hopeless that some of these people are. I haven't drank for a long time, and I felt that hopelessness. I felt that desperation. I felt there is nothing that can save me. I am doomed. That's when I decided to work the steps again, to the best of my ability at that time. And I attended this little big book study, men's big book study at a guy's house. And in the middle of that big book study, the psychic change, the spiritual awakening, the whatever it is you want to call it, actually happened. I went from wanting to believe there was a God because I was afraid I was going to get screwed, to believing that there was a God regardless if I got screwed or not. It didn't matter anymore because I knew that if my faith was strong, I did this program, not just on the edge of it, like my wife likes to say, you know, get in the middle of the bed because you're a lot less likely to fall off the edge. And I jumped into the middle this time, and I started to sponsor people. I started to go to literature meetings, you know, the big book and the 12 and 12 meetings. And the contact that I had with God is one that has not left me since. And that was about a year ago. So it took from the time I first got sober, and I'm saying this because there are probably some people here that are newly sober and are wondering when it's going to happen. And there may be some old timers that are here that are wondering, is it ever going to happen? That's when it happened. And it took 18 years for that to happen. It was 18 years well spent. Because, again, I am the sum of all the stuff that has gone before me in my life. And without having to go through all of that, I would not have the relationship I have with God today. And for me, that is the most important relationship in my life. Because if I don't have that relationship with God, I don't have a relationship with my wife, with my children, with my friends. I don't have anything. And if I say something up here that somebody else has said in the past, I'm not stealing it from you. It just means that I was paying attention that day. Okay? And of myself, I am nothing. And I am totally, utterly convinced of that. Now, yeah, there's times during the day where I think I'm something, and I'm quickly pointed the wrong way, or pointing back to where I'm supposed to be. And the fact is, of myself, I am nothing. Today, you know, I'd love to stand up here and say, I pray every morning and pray every night. I pray every day. I can guarantee you that. And sometimes it's one of those foxhole-style prayers, like, okay, I know I'm in the middle of this, God. I know I need to get out of the middle of it. Just help me get out of the middle of it. In a book that I read in the mornings, it's not conference-approved literature. But, you know, Dr. Bob and Bill worked with them at Fox way back when, so as far as I'm concerned, it's good stuff. On today's reading, it has something to do with demonstrating beyond my spiritual knowledge of the truth. In other words, grandstanding, spiritual pride. I can't do that. I asked God before I got here. I prayed hard too. God, I just want the truth to come out of my mouth. I want these people to know who I am. My sponsor told me a long time ago, about 2 years, that you have to make yourself available to people. You have to let them know who you are so that they know when you hurt. Because if they know when you hurt, they'll be there to help. And for me, that was a tough thing to do. That's been a tough thing to do for a long time, is to open myself up to let other people know who I am and the fact that I am hurting, because that means I'm vulnerable. And if I'm vulnerable, then obviously I'm not doing something my father taught me how to do. And that's to be a man. And big boys don't cry. And all that crap. You know? So, another incredibly good friend of mine also said to me, or actually in a meeting, I believe, you are loved to the extent that you are known. And to me today, that's part of, I don't want to say a mission, but as part of what I try to do, and sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's really hard. Tonight is really, it's not that easy. It's not that easy. But I know that it's the right thing to do, because if there's one person here that can relate, say, wow, you know, I know how that felt. And maybe they'll come back. The whole purpose of this program is to get the newcomer to come in here. Pure and simple. If the newcomers don't come, then AA will fizzle up and dry away. It's hard for me sometimes to see that. Today, you know, I do service. I have to. If I don't, I'm going to wind up drunk. And I don't mean physically. I mean emotionally, mentally. I will be drunk. I will behave like the alcoholic that I am. That's the natural part of me, is to behave like an alcoholic. So I have to do service. And sometimes it's hard for me to see how that service relates to, well, how the hell does that matter to a newcomer? But it does. It really does. And I have to just keep that faith in that something I do, say, pass out, I don't know, will happen for somebody else. They will find it. They will come here. I may not ever even know about it. And you know what? That's fine with me. I don't need to know about it. Just so that the newcomer gets in here and gets the help that they need. Because that's the only way I'm going to stay sober. And according to the book, that's the only way anybody else is going to stay sober too. I can't keep anybody sober. I can't be responsible for anybody else's stuff but my own. But I can, I attempt to live a life that reflects the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sometimes it's sometimes I do it actually, and sometimes it's just a simple prayer that is, God, just please today help me to believe. Not show me your way, show me what you need me to do, or it's just help me believe. And I have to get that honest. Otherwise, I'm just paying lip service. Yeah, God wants me to do this and this and this today. And I'm in my back of my mind, I'm like, you know, is there really a God? I mean, can all this stuff be happening? So I got to pray for just the willingness to believe. If I don't believe, it's not going to happen. So I stick very close to this program. I go to, I don't know, several meetings a week. It's important to do service, chairing a meeting, speaking. You know, my sponsor told me you don't say no in AA. So when Jim asked me, he was like, yes. I feel very privileged to be here tonight. Again, speaking in front of your home group is very nerve-wracking, but I feel very privileged to be here because I've grown to know a lot of you people over the last couple of years, and I love you all so much because without you in my life, I would not be here. And today, my life is good. No, I don't have the house or the car. But I have a wonderful wife. I have beautiful children. I have this place to come to when I'm feeling like crap. Get in cuss. Johnny told me no cursing and no bizarre sex. I said, well, that she talks to me, puts my talk down about 5 minutes. I could come here when I'm feeling like crap and immediately start to feel better because I know this is where my home is. I recently went down to Fort Myers for a few days on business, and I found a meeting down there. Walked into the meeting, it was a speaker's meeting, and immediately felt at home because I'm looking at people. Actually, when I drove up, I'm looking at this crowd of people outside smoking. I said, oh, that must be the alcoholics right there. They don't have no picnic tables like we do. They have to smoke by the dumpsters. But immediately I felt okay. I'd just gotten some news that was a little disturbing to me, but immediately I knew God was in charge. Nothing happens today in my life on my own accord unless it's bad. Okay? That's the only time I'm in charge is when it's bad. Okay? The good stuff in my life is because of God, period. I am here because of God. I'm here for God, period. Now, if I could do that 24 hours a day, that'd be really great. And maybe one day when I'm dead, I might get to that point. But right now, it's something that I have to live for. It's a purpose. You know, the purpose of this book is to afford us a spiritual awakening. And I'm really grateful for that. Because today, when I talk to God, it's on a real, real basis. I mean, it's me to Him. And no matter what I'm going through at the time, it doesn't matter how bad it is. If I'm honest with Him, I go to Him as a kid and I said, here's my stuff. You see what's in here. You know what's in here. I can't do it by myself. Every time, without exception, 100% success rate, my life gets better. The circumstances don't change, but my life gets better. Nothing 10 years ago is really any different than it is right now, except my attitude, except for the fact that I have complete faith in that God is going to take care of me no matter what I do. He loves me just as He loves everybody in this room, no more, no less. I'm no better than, I'm no less than. I'm just one of a family that's on this earth. And I am just really grateful to have that. And it's because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I wouldn't have it if it weren't for the steps, sponsors, meetings. I've been very privileged to attend some area assemblies, and it was just a phenomenal experience. So, to those of y'all that are new, God, please keep coming back. Because if you don't, we're all doomed. You know, I want to be here. I want to work the steps for a long time. It's not something that, you know, you do one time and just it goes away. I thought it did, but I was wrong about that too. I just want to be able to serve God in the best way that I can. Love and service, as Dr. Bob put it, is the two key aspects of this program. That's love for the people in it and service in making sure that you get the newcomer in here and do what you can to help him. That's the only way that I was able to get the help I needed, and it's the only way that I'm sober today. So, as somebody I used to listen to on the radio a lot, a famous guy named Paul Harvey, now you know the rest of the story. Thanks.
Appreciate that, Ray. And at this time, in keeping with our seventh tradition, which states there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we are self-supporting through our own contributions.